puts me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
And at this time every Sunday, we welcome Gordon Goldsboro from the Manitoba Historical Society for Abandoned Manitoba. Good morning, Gordon.
Good morning, Shanalee.
So, Gordon, can you remind us of the clue from last week?
I said that throughout Manitoba's settlement history, fires have had absolutely transformative effects on towns. This week, we're going to visit an abandoned building constructed in the aftermath of an absolutely devastating fire at Minto.
So, what do you mean by transformative effects of fires?
Well, as people established new towns all over southern Manitoba, they essentially created the ideal conditions for fires. Buildings in the business areas of these towns were thrown up quickly and cheaply, and so they were usually made of wood, very coarse, combustible. They were heated by fire, either by burning wood or burning coal, and they sat side by side, you know, very close to one another. It's no wonder, then, that fires could consume entire blocks, and especially given that most towns had very limited firefighting capability, usually just a bucket brigade of people passing pails of water from one to another.
And so what are some examples?
Well, one that is really quite noteworthy is that between 1886 and 1888, a serial arsonist set fire to 3/4 of the business district in Portage-la-Prairie, along, ironically, with the fire hall. In Arburg, a fire in 1917 basically destroyed most of the business district there, a general store, a pool hall, a drug store, a hotel. But for the purposes of our conversation today, we're focusing on that fire at Minto, which is located about 30 miles south of Brandon, that occurred on the 14th of October, 1930. In the wee hours of the night, a fire broke out in a general store run by a fellow named Jack Paradis. Now, witnesses vary in their accounts. Some think the fire originated in a stove, while others say it came from a gas-powered electrical generator that had been used to run a refrigerator.
And how did the fire burn other buildings?
Unfortunately, there was a very strong south wind that night. It carried glowing embers across the street, and it caused several more buildings there to catch fire. And of course, Minto, like many other towns, had only a bucket brigade to fight several fires at once. So in all, 7 buildings were destroyed: a hardware store, 2 general stores, a butcher shop, a drug store, a grocery, and the municipal office. The fire also destroyed the personal effects of the families who lived above several of these business blocks, as they really only had time to escape in their nightclothes. Bad as it was, though, the situation could have been worse. There was a bank building across the street, and it was kept from burning entirely when a man hung out of a second floor window with his legs held by 2 other men. I have this mental picture of this. He was hanging down so he could drape wetted cloths around wood on the face of the building that were on fire. Luckily, though, saving the bank building meant that a store and the telephone office that was located right next door were also saved.
Oh, wow. So was anyone killed in the Minto fire?
Not directly. Pharmacist Ernest Russell came the closest. He was very badly burned when he tried to fight the fire in his shop. It ultimately consumed his drugstore. But there was a fatality that was blamed on the fire. The rather ironically named Walter Sparks lost his butcher shop, along with his home that was located above the store, but he and his family escaped without injury. However, Walter's pregnant wife, Alice, was so shocked at the loss of their home and their business that she went into premature labor and lost their infant son.
Now, your clue mentioned a building that was built after the fire. What building?
Well, one of the buildings that was destroyed back in October of 1930 was the original office for the rural municipality of Whitewater that had been built in Minto's first year of existence, 1898. That office was staffed by the secretary treasurer of the municipality. He was a 47-year-old named George Keddie. He was an Englishman. He had immigrated to Canada with his widowed mother and his 5 siblings, intending to take up a farm. Unfortunately, George lost a leg in an accident with a threshing machine, so as a result, he had a wooden leg for the rest of his life. A few months before that devastating fire, Keddy got a job with the municipality, and in fact, during the fire, he was credited with rescuing the most important municipal documents that were in the burning building, which, of course, must have been quite difficult given his limited mobility with his wooden leg. And luckily, most of the other documents survived the fire inside a steel safe. Mr. Keddy also helped the municipal government to get back on its feet. He moved the municipal office into a local hotel and operated there until a new building was built. And so, in fact, in mid-1931, he called for tenders to build that new municipal office, the one that stands at Minto today. And this building had a significant advantage over its predecessor.
Oh, and what was that advantage?
It was made of bricks. Now, it's a common occurrence that when a building is lost to fire, of course, the owners are quite sensitive now to fire, and so they go to great lengths to prevent a recurrence with the new building. In this case, though, it appears the municipality kind of cheaped out in selecting the bricks for their building, which I guess may not be surprising given that the construction of the project occurred during the Great Depression. My friend Diane Rourke, who lives near Minto, actually obtained for my personal brick collection a couple of specimens from the old municipal office, and they're what's known as common or filler bricks. Not very durable, they don't have a good solid face on them. They're really not intended to be used on the exterior, except in this case, they were used on the exterior.
So ultimately, what was the impact of the 1930 fire?
The Minto local history book says, and this is a direct quote, "The town was never quite the same again. It survived and it rallied, but it never grew to be quite the town it was previously." Now, the bank building, the one I mentioned before, the one the guy hung out the window, it survived the fire. It had been built in 1918. It was occupied by the Royal Bank until 1987. So it remained in operation for a good long time. After it closed, the upper floor may have been used as residential space, but the main floor was never occupied again, and the building was demolished in 2013. The municipal office, the one that was built in 1931 by Mr. Keddy, it was vacated in 1984 when a new office for the municipality was constructed nearby. In 2015, though, the RM of Whitewater ceased to exist when it joined the RM of Cameron to form the present-day Municipality of Grassland.
So what happened to the old municipal building?
Well, until October of 2018, it was used 2 days a week as a branch of the credit union from Boisevain. But it's been vacant ever since. The building is scheduled to be demolished later this year. We're not quite sure when. And the idea is to make room for a playground of a new daycare facility in Minto that's taking over a closed restaurant nearby. So by the end of this year, most remnants of early Minto, other, by the way, than the magnificent Minto School building, which was constructed in 1928, everything else, all those early buildings will all be gone. Meanwhile, if we go back to Portage la Prairie, that arson that just devastated the town had a profound, long-lasting impact on Portage. In fact, it caused the realignment of the business district. So anybody who's familiar with Portage knows that everything is located pretty much along Saskatchewan Avenue. But in the old days, it was along Main Street. Well, they basically rearranged the whole town. And so that fire transformed Portage. Arburg, meanwhile, well, it's mostly rebuilt from the 1917 fire and is doing quite well.
Oh, so now I know why the Main Street is actually Saskatchewan. Thank you so much for that, Gordon. What's up for next week?
During the pandemic, my wife and I resolved we wanted to get more exercise while learning about Winnipeg's history. So each day, we would walk in a different Winnipeg neighborhood and watch for interesting details we saw along the way. I could probably take several episodes to discuss all our finds, but I'll start next week with an architectural feature from the 1960s that was hidden in some bushes in Fort Garry.
Oh, thank you so much for that, Gordon. I'm really looking forward to that.
We'll talk next week.
Excellent.
Bye-bye for now.
Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba, many moons.